The Runaway Trolley. Suppose you are the driver of a trolley car hurtling down the track at 60 miles an hour. Up ahead, you see five workers standing on the track, tools in hand. You try to stop, but you can't. The brakes don't work. You feel desperate because you know that if you crash into these five workers, they will all die. Let's assume you know that for sure. Suddenly, you notice a sidetrack off to the right. There is a worker on that track, too, but only one. You realize that you can turn the trolley car onto the side track, killing the one worker, but sparing the five. What should you do? Most people would say, turn. Tragic though it is to kill one innocent person, it's even worse to kill five. Sacrificing one life in order to save five does seem the right thing to do. Now consider another version of the trolley story. This time, you are not the driver, but an onlooker, standing on a bridge overlooking the track. This time, there is no sidetrack. Down the track comes a trolley, and at the end of the track are five workers. Once again, the brakes don't work. The trolley is about to crash into the five workers. You feel helpless to avert this disaster until you notice, standing next to you on the bridge, a very heavy man. You could push him off the bridge onto the track into the path of the oncoming trolley. He would die, but the five workers would be saved. You consider jumping onto the track yourself, but realize you are too small to stop the trolley. Would pushing the heavy man onto the track be the right thing to do? Most people would say, of course not. It would be terribly wrong to push the man onto the track. Pushing someone off a bridge to a certain death does seem an awful thing to do, even if it saves five innocent lives. But this raises a moral puzzle. Why does the principle that seems right in the first case, sacrifice one life to save five, seem wrong in the second? If, as our reaction to the first case suggests, numbers count, if it is better to save five lives than one, then why shouldn't we apply this principle in the second case and push? It does seem cruel to push a man to his death, even for a good cause, but is it any less cruel to kill a man by crashing into him with a trolley car? Perhaps the reason it is wrong to push is that doing so uses the man on the bridge against his will. He didn't choose to be involved after all. He was just standing there. But the same could be said of the person working on the side track. He didn't choose to be involved either. He was just doing his job, not volunteering to sacrifice his life in the event of a runaway trolley. It might be argued that railway workers willingly incur a risk that bystanders do not. But let's assume that being willing to die in an emergency to save other people's lives is not part of the job description, and that the worker has no more consented to give his life than the bystander on the bridge has consented to give his. Maybe the moral difference lies not in the effect on the victims, both wind up dead, but in the intention of the person making the decision. As the driver of the trolley, you might defend your choice to divert the trolley by pointing out that you didn't intend the death of the worker on the sidetrack, foreseeable though it was. Your purpose would still have been achieved if, by a great stroke of luck, the five workers were spared and the sixth also managed to survive. But the same is true in the pushing case. The death of the man you push off the bridge is not essential to your purpose. All he needs to do is block the trolley. If he can do so and somehow survive, you would be delighted. Or perhaps on reflection, the two cases should be governed by the same principle. Both involve a deliberate choice to take the life of one innocent person in order to prevent an even greater loss of life. Perhaps your reluctance to push the man off the bridge is mere squeamishness, a hesitation you should overcome. Pushing a man to his death with your bare hands does seem more cruel than turning the steering wheel of a trolley, but doing the right thing is not always easy. We can test this idea by altering the story slightly. Suppose you, as an onlooker, could cause the large man standing next to you to fall onto the track without pushing him. Imagine he is standing on a trap door that you could open by turning the steering wheel. No pushing, same result. Would that make it the right thing to do? Or is it still morally worse than for you, as the trolley driver, to turn onto the side track? It is not easy to explain the moral difference between these cases. Why turning the trolley seems right, but pushing the man off the bridge seems wrong. But notice the pressure we feel to reason our way to a convincing distinction between them. And if we cannot, to reconsider our judgment about the right thing to do in each case. We sometimes think of moral reasoning as a way of persuading other people, but it is also a way of sorting out our own moral convictions, of figuring out what we believe and why. Some moral dilemmas arise from conflicting moral principles. For example, one principle that comes into play in the trolley story says we should save as many lives as possible. But another says it is wrong to kill an innocent person even for a good cause. Confronted with a situation in which saving a number of lives depends on killing an innocent person, we face a moral quandary. We must try to figure out which principle has greater weight or is more appropriate under the circumstances. Other moral dilemmas arise because we are uncertain how events will unfold. Hypothetical examples, such as the trolley story, remove the uncertainty that hangs over the choices we confront in real life. They assume we know for sure how many people will die if we don't turn or don't push. This makes such stories imperfect guides to action, but it also makes them useful devices for moral analysis. By setting aside contingencies, what if the workers noticed the trolley and jumped aside in time? Hypothetical examples help us to isolate the moral principles at stake and examine their force. The Afghan goatherds. Consider now an actual moral dilemma, similar in some ways to the fanciful tale of the runaway trolley, but complicated by uncertainty about how things will turn out. In June 2005, a Special Forces team made up of Petty Officer Marcus Luttrell and three other U.S. Navy SEALs set out on a secret reconnaissance mission in Afghanistan, near the Pakistan border, in search of a Taliban leader, a close associate of Osama bin Laden. According to intelligence reports, their target commanded 140 to 150 heavily armed fighters and was staying in a village in the forbidding mountainous region. Shortly after the Special Forces team took up a position on a mountain ridge overlooking the village, two Afghan farmers with about 100 bleeding goats happened upon them. With them was a boy about 14 years old. The Afghans were unarmed. The American soldiers trained their rifles on them, motioned for them to sit on the ground, and then debated what to do about them. On the one hand, the goat herds appeared to be unarmed civilians. On the other hand, letting them go would run the risk that they would inform the Taliban of the presence of the U.S. soldiers. As the four soldiers contemplated their options, they realized they didn't have any rope, so tying up the Afghans to allow time to find a new hideout was not feasible. The only choice was to kill them or let them go free. One of Luttrell's comrades argued for killing the goat herds. "We're on active duty behind enemy lines, sent here by our senior commanders. We have a right to do everything we can to save our lives. The military decision is obvious. To turn them loose would be wrong." Luttrell was torn. "In my soul, I knew he was right," Luttrell wrote in retrospect. "We could not possibly turn them loose. But my trouble is I have another soul, my Christian soul, and it was crowding in on me. Something kept whispering in the back of my mind, it would be wrong to execute these unarmed men in cold blood." Luttrell didn't say what he meant by his Christian soul, but in the end, his conscience didn't allow him to kill the goatherds. he cast the deciding vote to release them. One of his three comrades had abstained. It was a vote he came to regret. About an hour and a half after they released the goatherds, the four soldiers found themselves surrounded by 80 to 100 Taliban fighters armed with AK-47s and rocket-propelled grenades. In the fierce firefight that followed, all three of Luttrell's comrades were killed. The Taliban fighters also shot down a U.S. helicopter that sought to rescue the SEAL unit, killing all 16 soldiers on board. Luttrell, severely injured, managed to survive by falling down the mountainside and crawling 7 miles to a Pashtun village, whose residents protected him from the Taliban until he was rescued. In retrospect, Luttrell condemned his own vote not to kill the goatherds. "It was the stupidest, most southern-fried, lame-brained decision I ever made in my life," he wrote in a book about the experience. "I must have been out of my mind. I had actually cast a vote, which I knew could sign our death warrant. At least, that's how I look back on these moments now. The deciding vote was mine," he wrote, "and it will haunt me till they rest me in an East Texas grave." Part of what made the soldiers' dilemma so difficult was uncertainty about what would happen if they released the Afghans. Would they simply go on their way, or would they alert the Taliban? But suppose Luttrell knew that freeing the goatherds would lead to a devastating battle, resulting in the loss of his comrades, 19 American deaths, injury to himself, and the failure of his mission. Would he have decided differently? For Luttrell, looking back, the answer is clear. He should have killed the goatherds. Given the disaster that followed, it is hard to disagree. From the standpoint of numbers, Luttrell's choice is similar to the trolley case. Killing the three Afghans would have saved the lives of his three comrades and the 16 U.S. troops who tried to rescue them. But which version of the trolley story does it resemble? Would killing the goatherds be more like turning the trolley or pushing the fat man off the bridge? The fact that Luttrell anticipated the danger and still could not bring himself to kill unarmed civilians in cold blood suggests it may be closer to the pushing case. And yet the case for killing the goatherds seems somehow stronger than the case for pushing the man off the bridge. This may be because we suspect that, given the outcome, they were not innocent bystanders but Taliban sympathizers. Consider an analogy. If we had reason to believe that the man on the bridge was responsible for disabling the brakes of the trolley in hopes of killing the workers on the track, let's say they were his enemies, the moral argument for pushing him onto the track would begin to look stronger. We would still need to know who his enemies were and why he wanted to kill them. If we learned that the workers on the track were members of the French Resistance and the heavy man on the bridge a Nazi who had sought to kill them by disabling the trolley, the case for pushing him to save them would become morally compelling. It is possible, of course, that the Afghan goatherds were not Taliban sympathizers, but neutrals in the conflict, or even Taliban opponents, who were forced by the Taliban to reveal the presence of the American troops. Suppose Luttrell and his comrades knew for certain that the goatherds meant them no harm, but would be tortured by the Taliban to reveal their location. The Americans might have killed the goatherds to protect their mission and themselves, but the decision to do so would have been more wrenching and more morally questionable than if they knew the goatherds to be pro-Taliban spies. The Afghan goatherds. Consider now an actual moral dilemma, similar in some ways to the fanciful tale of the runaway trolley, but complicated by uncertainty about how things will turn out. In June 2005,